Yep. No nonsense nutrition. You know, we're all about nutrition and we talk about food, but we also talk about other things. And the other things that we talk about are health. The other things that we talk about are nutrients and conditions and what we can do about it. And so every month when I have as my guest Dr. Fred Harvey, internist and geriatrician here in Sarasota, we get an opportunity to bounce back and forth what's going on both in the nutrition world and what's going on in the medical world. So welcome, Dr. Harvey. Let's get you a microphone live, and there you are.
Thank you, Eve. Good morning.
Hey, how you doing?
Excellent.
Nice to have the rain this morning, wasn't it?
Yeah, nice change.
I just hope it clears up so we can do Meet the Sky tonight.
I'm looking forward to that.
I know, you're turning into an astronomer right in front of my eyes.
Well, you inspire me, and thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. You know, this is the time of the year when I have clients coming in with a wad of tissues in their hands because they're starting to get the effects of February hay fever season. No, I know it's not February yet.
And it's not hay either.
And it's not hay either. And so when we look at the oak and the pine and the cedar trees, the ones that cause people with hay fever the most distress, we find it individuals that have watery eyes and watery nose and itchy eyes and itchy nose and sometimes itchy ears or itchy back of the throat, and they go at you, and their membranes all swell up, so they talk like this because their nose is all swollen. They talk like this because their throat is all swollen. And we see the effects of this pollen. And it creates a reaction in the body, and that reaction is what we want to talk about. And we're not going to talk about it just as it relates to oak and pine and cedar, but we're going to talk about it as it relates to food. So if you're one of those people that ever gets a reaction from food that you don't like, whether it's in your nose or it's in your belly, this is a show that it's important for you to stay tuned. So Dr. Harvey, talk to me about histamine and what it is and where it is.
So histamine, that is that little molecule that triggers all those symptoms. It's a really powerful organic amine is what it's called. It's derived from amino acids, the structural building block of all of our proteins. And this histamine is present in all of our tissues. It is manufactured and stored in some immune cells, white blood cells that are called mast cells or basophils. And the mast cells live in our lining tissues, basically. They live in the skin that is our external skin and also the internal skin, the mucosa that lines us from tip of the nose to the end of our anus. That is all barrier that is watched very closely by these mast cells. And basophils are circulating cells that go through the blood and the plasma, and they also contain histamine. They're like big water bags filled with this chemical, histamine, waiting to be released to induce the kind of responses that Eve was just discussing. The stuffy nose, the runny nose, the itchy eyes, the itchy skin, hives is another symptom we can get from the histamine. So it's prevalent in all of our tissues because it's one of our first distant early warning system type chemicals. It's a reactive chemical that keeps our system alert and helps protect us from foreign invaders.
And so what happens is when we get exposed to a compound that your body says is the enemy. Now, it might not be the enemy to your neighbor, and it might not be the enemy to your spouse or your kid, but it might be the enemy to you. Your body is going to respond really quickly because when that molecule lands on one of these histamine receptor sites, I heard you yesterday, doctor, talking about the fact that receptor sites were like antennas.
Yes, exactly that. So our basophils and mast cells have little antennas on there. And when they get sensitized, they have special antenna called immune globulins. IgE is the one that's associated with the immediate kind of allergy that you experience from, say, eating a peanut and having your whole body react with something called anaphylaxis. The reason it reacts is that IgE sits on the surface of the cells that contain the histamine. And when one of these foreign substances is received, essentially, by that antenna, it comes in contact with the IgE, it sets up a reaction that causes the water bag to burst and release all of that histamine into the local environment. If it happens in the blood, it releases it all through the body, and that's when people have the severe reactions and can die from peanuts or strawberries or bee stings, because the entire body goes through this cascade.
And so when we see water, itch, sneezing, and swelling, that list is the list that's very common to hay fever, but it's also really common when somebody eats a strawberry and breaks out in hives. They eat a melon and their throat closes up. As you said, they could eat a peanut and die. These are individuals that can have such profound reactions to histamine. But if you're one of the people that the dog comes in the room and your eyes start to itch, you start to see the yellow pollen on your car and you start sneezing, then you're somebody that these little water balloons full of histamine that are in your body, they explode just like you threw a water balloon off a balcony. And when they spill the histamine into the surrounding tissue, we're going to get the reaction of inflammation. We're going to get redness, we're going to get heat, we're going to get swelling, and those things are going to happen, and they happen really quick. IgE, remember, we've talked about this on No Nonsense Nutrition before, big I, little g, big E, immunoglobulin class E, that's something that can be tested. And so, Dr. Harvey, when somebody goes to an allergist and they get those scratch tests or those injection tests to find out whether they're reactive, what do you think about those tests?
Well, actually, they are quite effective at determining very specific sensitivities. They're not really very good at determining most food sensitivities, because most food sensitivities, it's quite rare actually to have the IgE-mediated food sensitivity, the immediate reaction. You don't hear many people having that severe peanut reaction. They're out there. But the real issue is that when we get exposed through those different foods that actually trigger that reaction, it's very severe. But there's a lot of other reactions that come simply from having histamine released in the body from other reasons, or actually ingesting histamine, or having damaged the system that doesn't allow us to get rid of histamine. Because histamine can circulate even without those acute food sensitivity reactions.
Well, but I just run over to the drugstore and I buy an antihistamine. And when I take an antihistamine, I'm blocking the effects or some of the effects of histamine. Doesn't that solve the problem all by itself?
Well, that's interesting. And that is, I think, how most people know about histamine, because they've been so
brainwashed,
yes, into a paradigm that looks for antihistamines as an answer to this. But
well,
no.
I mean, most of the medicines are anti-something. They're anti-cholesterol, they're anti-hypertensive, they're anti-stomach acid, you know.
Or
I mean,
even anti-aging. But
yeah,
we won't
right,
go there.
Right.
So it doesn't really solve the problem, though. Obviously, if we've already got the horse out of the barn, histamine running around the body, drugs that block its effect on the little receptors, cells also have receptors for the histamine itself. And so if we're just blocking it there, the histamine is going to be going around and eventually some of it's going to get through. The other problem with these histamine molecules is that they cause damage to the central nervous system. They block the chemical, one of them specifically acetylcholine, which is associated with Alzheimer's disease, and they also disrupt norepinephrine, which helps keep us focused on our thought process, essentially.
So this is why when somebody takes an antihistamine, they have a tendency to get sleepy, and they have a tendency to, well, just be a little goofy and not have a good memory. But you might say, well, Eve, I have hay fever. I am reactive to pine and oak and cedar. And as a result of that really high heat week that we had last week, these trees are going to bloom with a vengeance here very quickly. And at the point that they do, and you can write your name on the roof of the car in the yellow pollen, I've got to be taking antihistamines. Well, we're happy to say that Mother Nature has some antihistamines. And Mother Nature's antihistamines include herbs like nettles and one of the sidekicks of vitamin C called quercetin. So when we use nettle, known as stinging nettle, Urtica is the Latin name of the plant. You can go to the health food store and you can buy freeze-dried stinging nettle or a tincture of nettles. And this is Mother Nature's antihistamine. It will help to block those histamine receptor sites, what doctor referred to as antenna, and keep that foreign material from landing on that receptor site and causing that water balloon full of histamine to explode. And so there are things that we can use that don't make our brain goofy, like diphenhydramine. Diphenhydramine is the active ingredient in the majority of antihistaminic kinds of products, like Benadryl is an example of the classic version of it. And diphenhydramine, in my opinion, is pretty dangerous to the brain. Doctor, do you agree?
I would completely agree. I think, one of the things we know is that there are four different antennae in the body, essentially, for histamine. There are four different receptors, H1, 2, 3, and 4. And H2 and 3 have a lot of activity in the brain. And when you block that activity, you turn off the brain, essentially. Histamine actually helps to release adrenaline and noradrenaline, which are the activity and alertness chemicals. And so if we block that, we get sedated. And so we can, that's why when people take one of the older style, like diphenhydramine antihistamines, they get sedated. The newer ones have less sedation because they don't hit the H3 receptor, I believe it is, in the brain, so it doesn't turn off the alertness signals that the brain is getting.
Well, this is why people need to understand that anything that's got PM in the name, when they're taking one of those pain relievers with PM attached to it, they're getting that compound diphenhydramine. They're getting an antihistamine. And, you know, if somebody was going to use that a couple of times a year to help them to get to sleep, I wouldn't worry about it. But if somebody's using PM formulas every day to try to use it as a sleep sedative, I'm really concerned about it because the nature of the sedation effect is damaging to the brain over long-term use.
Yes, it really is. The longer we use it, I believe that the receptors end up being very tired, essentially, and so we downregulate some of that activity. So eventually people do get memory issues and other problems from using these things on a regular basis. It's interesting that there's another histamine receptor. It's the H2 receptor that is located a lot in the gastrointestinal system, and so the original ulcer medicines were actually antihistamines. Tagamet, Zantac, and Pepcid are all still antihistamines, and they work on that specific receptor. There is some activity in the brain, and they've noticed that even early on when I was using it back in residency, Tagamet, it was a miracle drug when it came out, but we started noticing that in elderly people, they would get completely confused, because the H2 receptor would turn off the acetylcholine in their brain, which is what the chemical is principally responsible for memory and cogent thinking. So these people would get very, very confused, almost psychotic and delusional when taking the Tagamet.
Yeah, 15 years ago I had a client, and she said that her mom had suddenly become demented. And I was like, suddenly and demented don't usually go together in the same sentence.
Right.
You know, it's usually a pretty gradual process. And she said no, that over about a 10-day period of time, her mother had started having aberrant behavior. She couldn't remember how to make coffee in the morning anymore. She couldn't remember the sequence of putting in the filter and then putting in the coffee and then pouring the water in the back. And she found her just standing in front of the coffee pot staring at it. And it happened to be in February. And, you know, I just got the brainstorm. I said, well, did you put your mom on antihistamines? Bingo! That was all it took. By the time her mom had been on antihistamines for 10 days, she couldn't remember how to make a pot of coffee.
It was so funny to see people being labeled with ICU, intensive care unit psychosis, in my residency, when it was absolutely a completely mistaken diagnosis. I've seen it even go on through today. When they put people on these high-level acid-blocking meds, they actually get demented, and they attribute it to a lot of different causes. But really, it seems to be, to me, the drugs. The antihistamines are so powerful. And it seems that it's very interesting that the gastroenterologists and allergists and ENT doctors that keep diagnosing reflux in their allergy patients, reflux meaning the regurgitation of acid up through the esophagus and into the larynx, ENT doctors are very skilled at actually detecting the inflammation on your vocal cords from the acid, but they've all forgotten that it's all most likely histamine-induced, because one of the interesting activities of histamine is to increase gastric motility. In other words, it makes your stomach start squeezing harder and faster. And it also increases gastric acid secretion. So think of the combination there. You increase stomach acid and you increase its squirt ability. I think you're going to get some reflux out of that.
Well, and, you know, one of the questions that I ask clients when they come in and they complain of GERD or reflux or heartburn or any of those words that people commonly use interchangeably, even though they do mean slightly different things, the most important diagnostic clue that I can get from the client is, do you get your heartburn immediately after you eat in 15 to 30 minutes, or do you get your heartburn 4 hours later? Because if you get your heartburn 4 hours later, it's usually a lack of acid that is the problem, even right. though that sounds counterintuitive. Everybody believes they have too much acid. But if the heartburn happens 4 hours after a meal, if the heartburn wakes you up in the middle of the night, it is more likely that it's a low acid environment, in which case all those acid blockers are the worst thing you could possibly use. But if somebody says they get heartburn in 15 to 30 minutes after a meal, now you're going to suspect that histamine has something to do with what's going on. And it isn't necessarily that the person is, quote, allergic to the food and getting a histaminic reaction. It can possibly be the fact that the food itself contains histamine, and that histamine flips on the high test switch of the parietal cells, these places in our stomach that produce stomach acid, and we just start producing stomach acid to beat the band. So that's a question for you, our listeners out there. Does your heartburn occur right after the meal, or does it happen hours later? That may be the way that you can determine whether histamine is a component of your problem.
And that's a really very good point, that this is not necessarily a food allergy. And really, most of what we experience is more a food sensitivity due to what's in the food, histamine, or that the food promotes release of histamine from all the cells that line your gut. That really, the IgE-mediated food sensitivity is minimal compared to this problem. And so if we ingest foods, like fermented foods. Many fermented foods contain histamine because the bacteria in the yeast, in their process of digesting the foods, produce histamine as a side or a byproduct. And so, sauerkraut, for instance, is going to be a histamine-containing food. Wine, anything fermented. Sake has 20 to 40 milligrams of histamine per liter, and red wine has 10 to 20 milligrams per liter. So just drinking the wine, it may not be the alcohol that causes the red flush, because histamine causes vasodilation or opening the blood vessels, which causes the flush. So it could be a histamine response simply by ingesting the histamine in your wine. And well, that produces that reaction.
And you know, the thing that I remember so distinctly is when I moved to Boulder, Colorado, they have big Oktoberfests out there. You know, any excuse to drink beer. And so they would set up the big Oktoberfest tents. And what would be the traditional food of the Oktoberfest? A bratwurst, which is sausage.
Right.
With sauerkraut on it.
Right.
And a beer. I mean, if you want a histamine cocktail, that's a histamine cocktail for sure. And I could pretty well bet that the week after, that whole week that would come after Oktoberfest, because they would set up the tents out in Boulder for 10 days.
Yes.
I would have tons of business from clients that had these reactions, these histaminic reactions. But at the time, I didn't realize it was histamine. I strictly thought it was ferment. So when we look at these high histamine foods, and again, we're not talking about foods that are going to make your nose run or get you sneezing. These are foods that are directly going to affect your digestion. The first thing that's going to happen is you're going to hear the beeping and honking and squeaking and rumbling and bubbling that I love the word. The word is borborygma, the noises mm-hmm. of the stomach. We're going to feel like our stomach is churning. And that's especially going to be happening, as Dr. Harvey said, with fermented foods. But if we take smoked meat like salami and ham and hot dogs and bratwurst and bacon, those are other examples. They're not fermented per se, but those are examples of food that can be very reactive in addition to things like sauerkraut. We're going to see it with blue cheese and Roquefort cheese and Stilton cheese, those things that actually contain active bacteria.
When did you hear the theme there and the foods she's been mentioning? They're all aged. They all spend some time between harvest and getting to your belly, and that's part of the process that creates this histamine.
And so we'll see it with Parmesan cheese as well as blue cheese and Roquefort and Stilton cheese.
But you don't see the same thing with that fresh mozzarella because it's not been sitting around.
And we'll see it not only with red wine and beer, but we'll also see it with champagne. Champagne
yes.
is another culprit. I've seen so many individuals who say, oh, if I drink a half a glass of champagne, I got a bad belly.
Right.
But we have to remember that all the vinegar products, whether it's ketchup or mayonnaise, whether it's mustard, whether it's balsamic vinegar and the balsamic reductions, these vinegars are ferments, and they can also cause a histaminic reaction. But it doesn't just have to be from fermented foods. There are both fruits and vegetables that contain histamine. And for the incredibly sensitive individual, eggplant and spinach, avocados and mushrooms, tomatoes and pears, raspberries and grapefruit, mangoes and tangerines, kiwi and banana, all of these things can be reactive for a person who is inordinately sensitive to histamine. And so doesn't make the food bad, just means that you can be reactive. And I'll have to add one more in the list, and it's the only one that I know that comes to us from the seed and nut category, and that's sunflower seeds. Sunflower seeds are definitely histaminic foods.
So histamine has another property in that it affects barrier integrity. It lines all of our barriers, and it's supposed to be a protector there, but it also can damage that protective barrier. Histamine will induce something called zonulin, which actually breaks down the tight junctions between all of the cells. When the tight junctions break down on, say, the capillary endothelium, the skin that lines the small vessels in your nose, they leak. Your nose swells. The water runs. When it happens in your brain, you get headaches. When it happens in your belly, you get belly aches. And then also, you get susceptible to even worse problems because once you break down those barriers in your gut, you can have foods sneak through. Yeast sneak through the little barrier openings and stimulate your immune system to develop even further food sensitivity, even direct allergy from that, and really upset the system. I know Eve talked about leaky gut, but histamine is a way to get leaky gut. So that's why it's so important to clear away not only foods that are reactive, specifically allergic foods that we can test for, but also to clear away all the histamine releasing and histamine promoting foods. And histamine-containing foods like tuna.
Yeah, tuna would definitely be high on the list, but what's true is especially the smoked fishes and the canned fishes.
Yes.
Those are things that are going to have way more histamine in them. The longer the gut stay in the fish, the more histamine that's there.
Yes.
If you pull a fish out of the water and you gut it right away, the histamine content is going to be low.
Right.
But if you take that whole fish and you bring it back to port and then you stick it in the freezer and then you don't gut it until you're ready to cook it, histamines actually will be formed in the tissue itself. That will be especially true of smoked fish, fish pâtés, and canned fishes across the board.
Right.
But, you know, what we want to remember is when we ingest histamine, again, the body hasn't had a histaminic reaction. We've ingested histamine directly by having that bratwurst with the mustard and the sauerkraut and the beer. We have a compound. We have an enzyme. And remember, if it ends in an ASE, it's an enzyme. And we have these special enzymes called diamine oxidase that are secreted or are supposed to be secreted by our digestive tract. And what they do is they're a pair of scissors. All enzymes are pairs of scissors. They cut other molecules up. And what diamine oxidase is, and we abbreviate it as DAO, it cuts apart the histamine. And so when somebody has a damaged bowel, they don't actually make DAO, and so they can't break down the histamine directly. And this is the place where the pill makes all the difference in the world, because if we put a capsule of diamine oxidase in our mouth and swallow that about 15 minutes before we eat, it may not give us the liberty to have a bratwurst with sauerkraut, mustard, and a beer, but it will certainly help break down the histamine. And what the real blessing is of this particular supplement is the fact that over time, when the body has not been insulted continuously by histamine, the body can actually heal these places in the gut called tight junctions and begin to create its own diamine oxidase. So the great thing about using this as a supplement is it may not be a forever and ever supplement. It may be a supplement strictly for short-term basis to allow the gut to heal.
Yeah, that brings us to a subject. We've been talking about this the whole time but haven't named it, but it's histamine intolerance. And that occurs when you have either too much histamine ingested or produced, or you have too little diamine oxidase to break it down. That imbalance between the two is a dynamic, or the balance between the two is a dynamic relationship, and imbalance relates to the intolerance. And all these symptoms we've been talking about relate to that intolerance. So if we can reduce the imbalance and improve that by adding DAO, thus healing the lining of the gut, we can, as you said, heal those tight junctions, grow back the lining of the gut because we're not insulting it with the histamine-containing foods any longer, and then produce our own DAO to reduce the whole burden of inflammation on the body. Because if we have active villi, they're called, the tiny finger-like projections across all the cells in the gut, if those are damaged, that's where the DAO works and produces its effect. If it's there waiting for those ingested foods, we'll have much less reaction and actually end up preserving the gut integrity, because that's what it's designed to do. It's having the intact gut with the DAO there waiting for the histamine ingested. That's our distant early warning. We can protect it and not have as much damage if it's there active. But if it's not there, then we're susceptible to even more and more problems. And the ongoing degrading effects of chronic food sensitivities, leaky gut syndrome, et cetera, that produces the really chronic syndromes that we see, like chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia. They're contributed to by this ongoing burden on the gut.
Well, and we can begin to find the histaminic individuals. You know, if you take a bioptic punch of somebody's skin, you can actually count the amount of histamine receptor sites that are going to show up underneath the skin. Even though those mast cells are floating around in the blood, there are some people that are very histaminic. If they get a mosquito bite, they swell up the size of a teacup. Somebody else gets a mosquito bite, they get a little red dot. You know, one person gets an ant bite, swells up tremendously, looks like a ping pong ball. Somebody else gets an ant bite, you hardly ever notice.
And you know, we don't even need to do a biopsy for it. All you need to do is take your fingernail and scratch it along the back of your arm. And
that's where I'm going. You just take your fingernail and scratch your arm. And what will happen is if you're a histaminic person, that's going to make a welt. You're going to have a raised welt that you can actually feel. If you're somebody that you can scrape along your arm and 5 minutes later you don't have a welt, then you probably don't have a tremendous amount of histamine. And so naturally, that histamine can still be provoked by these agents, but the person who gets a welt when you scratch their arm, and you know, every time you scrape something, you walk by and catch the edge of your leg on the coffee table, it makes a welt. You catch your arm on the door jamb, it swells up. Those are individuals that have this high histaminic component, because histamine tolerance is really not the same for everybody. And the amount of histamine that we bust out of those little water balloons is different for everybody as well. And so the histaminic person is going to have a much more violent reaction, both to the inhalant allergies like oak and pine and cedar and dog and cat and cockroach and dust mite and the grasses that show up in August and September. But they're also going to be more reactive to the histamine that comes from eating certain foods.
And so that whole picture of those histaminic people is really it can be helped as far as the gut symptoms with the DAO, but there are other things that we can do, as Eve was mentioning earlier, to help with the non-gut related symptoms, like nettles will help to stabilize the system and calm down that reaction. There are drugs too, like crumulin, sodium has been used. It's not as available as it used to be because, unfortunately, Western medicine treats symptoms and wants to have instant, immediate gratification from treating the symptoms, but crumulin is something that is preventive. You have to take it on an ongoing basis because what crumulin does is it stabilizes mast cell membranes. So the water bag, rather than being super sensitive to be able to explode at the touch of a finger, it actually requires a much more of an impact to cause it to release its contents. And so crumulin will help to do that. But it's a rather expensive drug, and it just has fallen by the wayside. But there's also a natural substance called quercetin, which Eve talks about all the time. And quercetin is a great mast cell stabilizer.
So is B12.
And B12.
You know, I find an awful lot of people that have these mast cell problems, that have these watery, itchy, sneezy noses and watery, itchy eyes, as soon as we get their B12 high. You know, Dr. Harvey, that's one of the very few things that I actually want to see out of range on a blood test.
As well.
You know, when I look at the ranges, and the ranges for B12 often are 200 to 900 or thereabouts, I want to see 1200s and 2000s on that B12.
So do I.
Because if you don't have that much B12 in your blood, you sure as heck don't have enough in the cell. It's really an antiquated measurement. And those of us that are in the arena of integrative and functional medicine see that as kind of a throwaway test. There is a test called methylmalonic acid, which is a much more accurate indication of your B12 levels. But the nature of the B12 itself acts with quercetin together to do what the crumulin, the drug, does, which is to stabilize the cell wall itself so that it makes it harder to get that cell to explode and dump its histamine payload into the surrounding tissue. So nettles works by blocking the histamine receptor site, but quercetin, B12, and crumulin all work by stabilizing and making stronger that water balloon of histamine.
I really like Ayurvedic medicine because it talks about our reality in very different qualitative terms. Many things that are associated with inflammation are associated with red color, and yet the substances we use to stop the inflammation caused by histamine are red. B12 is red, and quercetin is the red on the red apple and the red in the red onion. And so it's very interesting that that Ayurveda has a way of matching that, essentially. In any event,
Well, I'm going to come back on that because one of the most histaminic foods is cherries and tomatoes, and they're about as red as you get, and they actually cause the problem.
It's
so,
very true.
So
true. So back to DAO. Our gut makes it. It wants to make it, and we need to facilitate the gut making it. And one thing that I've seen that actually there's good evidence for helping us make more DAO is fish oil. Fish oil helps to improve gut integrity, and once we do, we can improve the DAO levels. In fact, it's really interesting. We can look at DAO in the blood, even though it's not something that's terribly for us as far as the symptoms are concerned. The DAO in the blood is not what we're trying to do. We're trying to get the DAO in the gut to heal the gut, but we can follow plasma levels of DAO in people that have gut injury. They did a very elegant analysis of a group of people that were getting oral chemotherapy for a gastric cancer. And after 4 weeks of therapy, their DAO levels in the plasma were gone. And the ones that didn't get the chemotherapy in another group had normal DAO levels and maintained them. And when they went off the chemotherapy, the DAO came back. So it's directly related to the function of your gut lining cells. And so it would make sense then to me to say if somebody's undergoing chemotherapy, maybe they should be on DAO to help protect the gut lining since it is actually getting damaged. You need something in there to help prevent the reactions.
Or if somebody's had food poisoning.
Or even with food
poisoning. The nature of food poisoning is so common. You know, two times in the last week, I've had somebody come in my office and say I had that 24-hour stomach bug. And I went, well, there's no such thing as a 24-hour stomach bug.
Right.
You know, flus are all about the lungs. They're not about the digestive system, although they can affect the digestive system. And so when they say they've got a 24-hour stomach bug, what they really had was food poisoning.
Right.
And a lot of people don't realize that four individuals can sit around the dining room table and eat the same meal, and somebody can end up with food poisoning and the other people don't, even if they're eating off the same chicken or the same, you know, casserole. So we want to understand that when there has been an insult to the gut, whether it's too much alcohol, whether it's food poisoning, whether it's chemotherapy, whether it's a series of antibiotics, whether it's people that are taking these PM products every day, every day, every day, people that are taking, you know, acetaminophen, ibuprofen, aspirin, naproxen, any of these pain relievers, and they're taking them every day and they're taking them multiple times a day. All of these things can insult the gut lining, these barriers that happen in the gut, and cause the body to downregulate the ability to make DAO. And so this may be a supplement that one person is going to use every meal 365 days a year because they're so histaminic, and it may be a supplement that somebody else uses where they're only going to use it for 5 or 10 days after they have the food poisoning until the body recovers its own ability to make diamine oxidase.
So the one of the other things that I think is interesting about the histamine effect is that it really does affect the mood. Beyond just that, what we're talking about antihistamines and causing delirium or dementia, is that histamine is a neurotransmitter, and histamine does help release adrenaline and noradrenaline. So histamine can induce irritability, mood changes, and in fact, schizophrenics appear to have low levels of histamine, and I believe ADHD has high levels of histamine, which would seem to indicate why they might not be able to focus, because their brain is so busy from the overstimulation of the histamine that they just can't stay in one spot. So we can't actually affect these levels directly because there's some genetic components associated with the schizophrenia, but DAO may help them maintain a better gut. And may help maintain overall histamine levels eventually, because we're stabilizing the histamine metabolism in the gut rather than using it all up.
Yeah. Well, let's put those two things together, because we want people to understand that diamine oxidase is not used for the cat allergy. It's not used for the oak allergy. It's not used for the schizophrenic in terms of breaking down the histamine.
Right.
The nature of DAO is that it's not absorbed and it works directly on the histamine in the gut. But we want to talk about what I refer to as total body burden. If you have a situation where you have an inhalant allergy like pine and oak and cedar, and I keep mentioning those three together because that is really the cocktail of plants that cause us problems in Sarasota County in February. Sometimes it starts in January, it drags into March, and in very rare years it can drag all the way down into April. But if you have a reaction to one of those airbornes, and you turn around and eat the bratwurst with the sauerkraut and the beer, I keep going back to that example because it is one of the maximum ways that you could get the most histamine dietarily. If you did both of those, well, then you're getting slammed from both sides. Your body is releasing the histamine that's in your mast cells, and you're taking in histamine dietarily. Now the DAO would reduce the entire body burden and actually make the nose symptoms easier to deal with. It wouldn't eliminate them, but it would reduce the total body burden.
Yeah, and that's really key. It's actually looking at the system functionally as a whole. And unfortunately, Western medicine is so specialized that we look at little pieces of it. Somebody has GERD, they get a purple pill. The purple pill simply stops acid. It would be much better to treat the person with GERD who probably has histamine problems with a Tagamet or Zantac if we're going to go with pharmaceutical intervention, because that will block the histamine, which is really the source of the problem, and won't essentially get the person addicted to ongoing acid blockade because it's actually treating the underlying issue. But really, getting the DAO back to normalcy and keeping the histamine DAO balance dynamically active so that we have stable and improved immune function rather than assaulted immune function. We'll reduce that body burden, because every time that we induce inflammation in the body, we send more than just histamine, more than just that's going on. There are many other chemical signalers that are going out and disrupting the way the body's functioning too. So blocking the histamine at the start of the cascade of all the other inflammation really helps to reduce that burden and make everything function better.
Except if we take aspirin. Aspirin blocks the metabolism of histamine. And so a lot of times when people are having this load going on in their body, they're going to grab an aspirin to try to, you know, just reduce the headache, reduce the aches, you know, reduce the reaction, and then they'll interfere with the histamine metabolism as a result of that.
And the aspirin will erode some of the gastric lining and
get rid of some of the DAO. Okay, DAO. You're so off and running at that point, aren't you?
Back in a different...
But let's go back to the fish oil, because yes. Dr. Harvey, you know, the regular listeners of No Nonsense Nutrition know that fish oil will fix everything except our Congress. And so,
actually, it may help there.
Yeah, it really would. I wish I could put it in the water. The nature of fish oil increasing the body's ability to make diamine oxidase is true because we're reducing the overall inflammatory aspect of the bowel. But, you know, fish oil reduces inflammation globally. It can reduce inflammation in the brain as Parkinson's. It can reduce inflammation in the joints as arthritis, in the lungs as asthma, in the skin as eczema and psoriasis. I mean, there's not a place that fish oil doesn't have a benefit in terms of reducing inflammation. And I just want the listeners to know right away that there is no way that you can use flax oil and get the same benefit. There is a mounting body of evidence that speaks to the dangers of flax oil. Not flax seeds, not ground flax seeds, but flax oil itself. It rancidifies very easily. It does not turn into EPA and DHA, the active ingredients of fish oil. Only about 7 to 12% of flax oil can change over into these anti-inflammatory compounds. So it's important that the nonsense that keeps being perpetuated, that flax oil is an omega-3 and is therefore equivalent to fish oil, that we blow that out of the water. Because fish oil is fish oil, it does not have an ability to be duplicated.
That's so true. And another thing about the fish oil is that it's the concentration, really. There is some omega-3 in flax oil, but fish oil is just so highly concentrated in those products that those are the ones we need. We need the omega-3s, and flax is basically omega-6. I had a patient that came into my office the other day, and we were talking about the food sensitivities, and they had been to their primary doctor, who told them flat out, "We don't believe in food sensitivities."
Oh, really? Like it's a religion?
I was thinking that very same thought. But it's so evident.
This isn't about belief.
Yeah. Yeah, there's evidence there. Science doesn't
require
a belief system.
Right.
It's not dogma. Actually, the primary care doctor was talking dogma. It's so evident that people do react. I can't understand how somebody could even, in this day and age, make that statement, because it's obvious that people do have reaction to foods. Even without having a study to back it up, seeing my patients and listening to what they say. Yes, I flush when I have wine. My head stuffs up when I do this. I mean, it's
my ears turn red when I eat those foods.
Exactly. To actually make a statement like that is just so eyes wide shut.
Yeah, eyes wide shut. Willful blindness is what it is.
Yes.
Well, we hope we don't have any willful blindness on this show. And I appreciate always the third Monday of the month, my guest, Dr. Fred Harvey, internist and geriatrician. Thank you, Dr. Harvey, for joining me today.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you.
And we'll see you back here in February. And so for those of you with a histamine intolerance, I mean, now you know what to do. If your nose is running ruining your life, then look for nettles and quercetin. You know, look for vitamin B12. Those are the things that can help that runny nose and itchy eye and watery eye and sneezy nose. But if you're one of those people that certain foods make you gurgle and beep and honk down in your digestive system, they make you do your belly does things you don't necessarily want it to do, then diamine oxidase may be your new best friend. So always take this information and run with it, because we know you can get healthier as a result.